Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 6 of the Modern Masculinity Project. I am your host, Brad Pankey. Thanks for downloading, thanks for listening as always, and thank you to those of you who have subscribed and rated the podcast on iTunes. It's a big help, and it's nice hearing the feedback on the side as well. Be grateful if all of you would give a nice rating and offer some feedback so we can help this podcast grow and get the support out there we need to reach more people. Each week this podcast just keeps growing in who's listening and how many people and where they are. And it just kind of warms my heart, to be honest with you. I even have someone listening in Nepal. Yeah, Nepal, in Mount Everest, Nepal. So to that person, if you're listening, thanks for tuning in. That's pretty rad and a little unexpected, to be honest. Be curious to hear how you even found out about the show. Email me. What's also unexpected is how much each of these conversations kind of sit with me for a while, and each for a very different reason, I suppose. You know, I relate to what a lot of these guys have shared, but at the same time, they each have had something different to share. They've each walked a different path in defining themselves as men or finding their place in the world. And it's in these differences that I've really learned a lot and even been challenged to rethink my own views on what it means to be a man. And so I've arrived at a place following the first 5 episodes that I've started to explore within myself what makes me feel like a man, really just diving into those feelings. What do I do that makes me feel masculine? And also, what makes other men feel like men? Hell, is there even a difference between feeling like a man and feeling masculine? Do other men see a difference, and what differences are they seeing? I've also been wondering when it is, at what point do men diverge from one another? Because it seems like from a young age, boys start out kind of down the same path, just bopping around and being boys. But when is it that they realize that we are all indeed men, but that we're all also made from different materials? We're all forged from different metal. What is being done to help these boys at this critical juncture? It seems like a lot of the conversations I've had, the through lines have been that a lot of these guys have reached a certain point in their lives and been kind of confused or angry and had nowhere to turn, and that kind of set them down their paths and the stories that they've told. But it's interesting to explore or think about what's being done at these forks in the road. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. And the other question is, what in the hell does this have to do with this week's conversation? Well, this week I happen to have a great conversation to share with an expert in the area of helping young people navigate this very critical juncture, this point of divergence. Morgan Rich is my guest this week. Through his Portland, Oregon practice, Play Huge, he guides young adults and their parents through a program which he calls Training for the Unknown, and that's designed to provide teens and parents the tools to handle these sometimes frightening times of uncertainty in life, and when they meet the obstacles that seem to crop up one after another that cause a lot of anxiety. He's also involved in a lot of public speaking on the topic of masculinity. For men in the Portland, Oregon area, you can see Morgan speak at Yoga Union in Southeast Portland on June 15th, where he will be having a conversation on toxic masculinity. You know, I wish I could say that this conversation was set up on purpose, given what I mentioned I was thinking about, but that's not the case. That would require planning, but this is something that just came together at the right time, and I'm so grateful that it did, because it has given me a lot to think about And moreover, it introduced me to a wonderful dude who I've had fun chatting with, you know, outside of the podcast, and just seeing the amazing work that he's doing in the world and work that's very important nowadays. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this vulnerable and honest conversation. Episode number 6 of the Modern Masculinity Project, Downstream Effects with Morgan Rich.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me, I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows, only heaven knows where the two winds flow, where the rivers flow.
In Prague? Uh-huh. How'd you like Prague?
I was a knuckleheaded high school kid.
Oh, yeah?
So I don't really remember the...
Don't really remember
I
too
don't
much.
Remember it so much.
Yeah.
It seemed interesting, though. I mean, I think... It was behind the Iron Curtain still at that point.
Oh, wow. What, so what year was that?
1987.
Okay.
Let me just think if that's right.
Yeah, that's 30 years ago. That's when I was born, 31 years ago. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah.
There it is.
I was in high school.
Yeah. Well, when I was there, it was coming off a work week, so I was pretty amped up, and I was like, oh, vacation. But I got there, and there were just so many people there. It was so intense.
Wow.
It was like you could barely walk over the St. Charles Bridge.
Huh.
Because it was just crowds and crowds of people.
For any particular reason or just because?
Just tourists, I think. Hmm. It's just tourism. It's a really heavily, you know, trafficked city. And but I got there and I was like, okay, too much. Too much. So
yeah, I don't remember that. Like, I don't remember it being, but I was there playing hockey. So.
Oh, you played hockey?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. So we're just kind of rolling here.
Okay.
Yeah. That's just how we start. So
cool. All right. We just start talking.
Yeah. 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 tell me a little bit about where'd you grow up then?
I grew up in Chicago.
Chicago. So hockey. Definitely,
hockey.
Definitely
grew
a thing.
Up in the city of Chicago.
Okay.
So I was in the city, and it was I just started skating, and I'm a good athlete.
Yeah.
So, hockey, baseball, and loved it. I love hockey.
Yeah.
And so when I got to high school, mm-hmm. I was in living in Chicago, and there aren't any really high schools in the city that have hockey. So I said, I want to go to boarding school. So I went off to boarding school in Michigan.
Oh, wow.
In Bloomfield Hills, Michigan at Cranbrook, and played. I didn't really know what I was getting into, but started playing hockey there. They're a really good team.
Yeah.
Whole interesting story around trying to make the team. But eventually played in the varsity team and won a couple of state championships. Went to Europe to play there. And that was actually my sophomore year. So, God, that was 1985.
Wow.
85, 86. Yeah, when I was in Czechoslovakia.
That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome. So, you made the decision early to go to boarding school?
I did.
You made that decision.
I made that decision.
What was behind that?
It was my dream.
Okay.
I grew up in, I was 10 years old when the USA beat the Russians in the Miracle on Ice.
Caught the bug.
I was a hockey player.
That's cool.
I was in Lake Placid, New York. I was in Vermont, which is near Lake Placid, Vermont, New York, where it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I was visiting my dad, who had been living away from home, mm-hmm. away from me for many years. So I was there with my dad. They're playing in the Olympics. They win the Olympics. I'm a young kid, I was a good player. So, I want to play in the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, I want that to be me.
So you committed.
So I came back just logistical. My parents drove me 1 year, 45 minutes a day back mm-hmm. one direction to the suburbs to play hockey. And it didn't really go, that's just a lot on their plate.
Yeah.
So I got home and, after that year, they were like, no more of that. So I didn't play for a couple of years. And I'm like, I got it. Like, this is my dream.
Yeah.
So I just was like, I went for it. And I was
chasing
like,
it.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd say that's a pretty big commitment to go to Europe to.
Yeah. I mean,
get after it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Europe is, it was a fun trip, to go away to boarding school. It was just like, it was a huge thing.
I was
10th grade in high school and
wow,
I was ready to go after my dreams.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I was a terrible student. I mean, I was just like, school was not my thing
at all.
Not
your thing. That seems to be the case. I mean, I had, I was a, was a pretty committed student, I guess, in high school and in college, but it was easy for me. But I knew a lot of friends who were super smart, but they just school wasn't their thing. You just couldn't, they didn't want to, I don't think. It's just boring.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of that. What I find today, I mean, I work with teenagers, mm-hmm. so I get to hang out with a lot of those guys. And
yeah.
I know for me, I now have sort of realized, like, I'm a big hearted guy.
Yeah.
I'm a really caring guy. I was actually talking to someone earlier today about the funny piece of playing hockey, and I'm really competitive. Like I am really competitive,
yeah.
but I'm also just like a big teddy bear, you know, just like caring and thoughtful. And I didn't want to be like the jock. I was never like the jock, you know, the guy who was like mm-hmm. super arrogant. And, you know, I think I probably came off as that, but I was so scared and insecure and unsure of myself.
Right.
But like just a really good hearted guy. And the academics of school, just I felt bad about myself through my whole childhood, really.
Yeah, you know, I actually read a little bit of your bio, doing a little homework,
and
a lot of what you wrote there in that really resonated with me. Hmm. Even your whole story, kind of about your dad a little bit, and right. we'll get into that. But yeah. Tell me about kind of growing up as a big hearted, soft guy, and especially in like Chicago. Now that you tell me that, because
right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm so able, like I'm so capable. And I think I would say it is in the physical world, I just have like what is one of my intelligences. You know, yeah. I know where I am. I know directions. I know how to get around. I know, you know, I just am able to navigate that. So like living in the city, you know, wasn't such a big thing for, you know, just like, I just live in a city and I can like get around and not get in trouble. And
right.
It's fun stories of like almost getting mugged and like catching a guy mugging me. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Guy tried to pickpocket me.
Oh my gosh.
And I caught him and, I was getting on the train. Yeah. He was getting, you know, he like pulled this little maneuver and I totally saw it coming and he put his hand in my pocket and I like grabbed him and he was like,
oops.
And it was right at rush hour. So there's like people rushing on and off the train. And then I felt for my keys in my wallet and they were both there. And so I let him go. And then I had like $5 loose in my pocket and he grabbed it. So,
yeah. But you've always had that kind of that sense of
that sense. I mean, that's one of my intelligence, you know, like mm-hmm. I didn't do well in school, but like in the world, just a lot of awareness.
Okay. And that hyper awareness, then that can be kind of also a tricky thing to deal with, right?
I think so. I mean, it's an interesting, yeah, like, you know, yes. And I didn't know it though.
Especially a younger person though.
Yeah. And I had no idea. Like, mm-hmm. I just had no idea. I mean, I sort of knew it, but it was just like, that's how everybody is in the world.
Sure.
And, you know, cause like, it was so easy. Like it was so obvious to me to like see the world in that way that I'm like, oh, well that's so everyone's got to be able to do that. And then like slowly much later in my life, I was like, oh, wait a second. Not everyone has that ability and that capability. And yeah, but you know, you're like how to be a caring guy. I mean, I think I would say it in a way that is, just part of my journey on this planet. And, you know, part of the deal with who I am and what I'm here for is, I felt really lonely and I felt like I didn't fit and I felt like I didn't, I was so lost in school, but then, you know, I went to a private school, really nice private school. And, you know, the teachers gave good feedback, you know, he's a leader and people like him and this sort of thing and the other thing. But like, I felt like they didn't see me. Like I really did not feel understood or seen or like just no one knew like how sort of painful my experience was. Sure. And it's interesting because like I think people were, you know, again, like externally, I think I was, you know, I was an athlete, had a lot of friends, but that was not what was going
not
on
what was being,
inside of me.
Weren't really reflecting the inner from the outside.
Yeah. And it's like fast, you know, I think my teachers would be shocked to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of, the same thing for me. I wasn't much of I was kind of more of a runner type. So I was always kind of doing my own thing, but I felt the same way. And like you kind of wrote that you're kind of like almost aloof to what was going on. And I kind of felt that same way a little bit. And looking back, it wasn't necessarily like a problem at the time, but it was like, now when I look at it, it was like, oh, I was kind of completely disconnected from anything that was going on as far as like growing as a man or anything as, you know, when I was young and in high school. So, but it was kind of interesting just to read that you felt the same way, but also that you pointed out that in a non-destructive way.
Yeah. Again, it's like a, it's a funny, I mean, I'm curious about your story also, yeah, you know, of like how that sort of manifested itself. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I think there's some funny things in the world of like, I wasn't destructive.
Yeah.
I was, you know, lonely and just wanting to fit in and wanting to, you know, like, just be included in stuff.
Yeah.
And, but never really like, I didn't fall into the, like self-harm or like, right, any kind of like,
drinking or anything like
in
that.
High, when I went away to boarding school, there was definitely drinking, yeah, and there, yeah, was definitely some, like, we did some really stupid,
sure,
things.
Yeah, sure. Right.
You know, moments where I was just talking to someone about the whole like fire in the gorge last year, and, yeah, the teenager that, like, you know, who just recently got fined like $37 million, yeah, or whatever it was.
Yeah, that guy got,
I totally want to work with that kid.
Yeah.
I think I'd be great for that kid, but, mm-hmm, I just think I'm like, what an interesting story he has.
Sure.
I mean, all of them, like everyone who was there has been dramatically impacted.
I can't imagine. Can't, yeah, imagine.
Yeah. And just like, and just, to, you know, I imagine they have a huge amount of guilt and a lot of shame and a lot of, you know, and I just, I mean, I feel like I did a lot of really stupid things when I was a teenager as well.
Kind of, you know, when that first happened, everyone was like, try him as an adult, get him. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like, let's pump the brakes here a little bit and show some compassion for the kid. And like, he royally messed up.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like, royally, but we shouldn't like destroy his life over that thing. And let's try to be a little more gentle with people. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a really hard, cause I'm like, love the gorge. I'm
sure,
so like sad, of course, that it burned and, you know, that it's just all that. And yeah, like, I mean, who hasn't been a teenager doing dumb things? I mean, right, we drove drunk. Like, we would go to parties at boarding school, and this happens. I promise you that this happens at every boarding school around the country still. I mean, those, you know, like, we had to get back to the dorm by 12:30 at night. Mm-hmm. That was our curfew.
Yeah.
We're at a party. There's like my group of friends and another group of friends. And we all have to get back. We have to get back or else we're, you know, in massive trouble.
Yeah.
And it's like, who's going to drive? And I just remember, I mean, maybe now they have designated drivers. Maybe they're smart enough to do that.
Maybe
the girls are. I don't know whatever. You know, so we'd be like, who is most able to drive? And we would like, whoever raised their hand, right, would drive home. And then no one died. I mean, like, you know.
It's amazing.
It's really actually remarkable that we didn't kill ourselves or somebody, sure, else. And for me, it's one of those things where I'm thinking of the guy in the gorge. You know, it's like, he made it, you know, it's like, what I was imagining, I don't actually know what happened. There he is with several girls. He's probably feeling, you know, he's wanting to show off. He's wanting to, you know, like, impress the girls. He's like feeling a little scared of himself. Right. I mean, again, I don't know the kid. I'm just like, yeah, making up the story of, you know, thinking, who doesn't do things, you know, as boys to impress girls or boys, depending on, you know,
right,
you know,
right,
like, you know, you kind of, you do these goofy, crazy, yeah, things, you know, like, watch this, like, yeah, you know, and you throw it off. And in this case, like, for this kid and these kids, it just had this
catastrophic,
horribly, yeah, catastrophic situation.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen for me. Like, sure, we didn't kill anybody. We didn't, you know, but, yeah, it could have.
Sure.
And I would guess that most of us have had moments like that in our lives,
sure,
where if just, you know, a total twist of fate, could have been.
Yeah. And, you know, like with a lot of the guys that I've talked to, not a lot, but a few of the guys that have come on the podcast, they've, you know, some of them have kind of slipped into either alcoholism at some point or really struggled with drinking or drugs. And so can you just even be like, maybe it could have been one more night of drinking and you go down a self-destructive path. So it's pretty amazing how you can kind of, some people go there and others don't.
Yeah. And I just think of it as like, so, I mean, where I start to get interested in it is, so that's this kid's story, you know, yeah, for whatever reason, this guy's story, and again, like I would include everyone there. So these kids' stories,
right,
includes this. Holy shit! We like, is it okay to swear?
Oh, absolutely, say whatever you want. Yeah,
just making sure.
Yeah, this is the internet. We can do whatever we want for now.
I do all the time.
Yeah, so, no problem.
You know, just like for these, like, for what I was saying, but you know, it's just like this is their story.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, this is their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it intrigues the hell out of me.
Yeah,
actually.
And so before we kind of, tell me about what specifically you do then for work.
Yeah, nice. So what I call it is training for the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've wandered a long way of trying to find what it is I do for work. So I'm not a therapist very intentionally. Right. I have been a life coach. I've called myself a life coach for a long time. I'm not doing that anymore because I don't really play by the rules. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to play by the rules because I think that in the same way that I feel like I got missed as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like I was a good-hearted kid who had a huge amount to share and bring. And I needed an adult. I needed someone to see me and understand and bring out that whatever the hell was going on in me,
sure.
Which was something really interesting, but it was like, there was energy running in me that I didn't understand right. And I needed help.
It didn't seem like a lot of people are looking for that in boys either.
Not looking for it in boys. And I would, yeah, totally. And yeah, completely. Yeah. And I think, I mean, and yeah, I mean, I imagine we'll get into it, but like yeah. The world needs good hearted boys,
sure.
Right? Good hearted men. Mm. And, you know, and we're missing them because they're out there. And so a lot of my work is around like really helping see these guys who are struggling in school, who don't feel a sense of purpose or going like, what the hell? Like, why just calculus? Why am I taking pre-calculus or calculus? Or like, what is the point of this? Mm-hmm. You know, and then they struggle in school and then they think they're like on the wrong path. You know, like if you don't aren't on the like college trajectory game, then you're not on the right path. And I just want to say like that, I really do not believe that is true.
Right.
I would say most of these kids who are like not on the path or who are depressed or are anxious or whoever, whatever it is, they're actually kids running really interesting energy that the world needs. Mm-hmm. That the world, like we desperately need caring, good-hearted, whole people who are willing to stand up and go like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Those are the people we do need, right?
Those are the people we need. And yeah. they feel shitty about themselves mm-hmm. because they think they aren't doing things right True. Because they aren't getting good grades or they're dropping out of school or they aren't getting, you know, college track or whatever it is. And so my work is essentially saying like,
like, trying to catch them at that point.
Yeah.
That and fork the, in the
and
road. The,
exactly. And the families and saying like, no, this is actually really, really good, honorable struggle. And the questions they're asking are important and exactly the questions they should be asking. What we need to do is support them to dive further,
yeah.
You know, and have it be okay to be struggling. And in fact, have it be good that they're struggling because they're asking the right hard questions and they're willing to, they aren't willing to just like sit with it and numb it. Right. Mm-hmm. Some of them are right. They're numbing it because they don't know what to do with it, but like they're willing, like if they're willing to sit in that and struggle with that, that is golden.
Yeah. There seems like there's a willingness to do the important work that needs to be done, but they don't know where to go.
They don't know where to go. And it's really hard to do it alone. Yeah. Like I think what I, so training for the unknown, right? So what I say is like, we have to be ready for life, for the unknown moments. And mm-hmm. so then what we're doing is building a community of guys who is saying we are in this, right? To do the right work and to not do it alone. Mm-hmm. Cause what I would say is like, I had to do it alone.
Yeah.
And I figured it out.
Yeah.
Which is great, you know, and like there's a certain level where I think to the, you know, the guys I work with, like, you know, they will figure it out. Like life, you know, this kid in the gorge, you know, like he's got a lot of questions to answer and to ask. Yeah. And like, he's on an interesting journey.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and he's going to have to dig deep and really look at that. And I'm hopeful that he, you know, figures it out. He might not, you know, it might be too much. But to do that work by yourself, you know, I think the way I think of it is like, yeah, you know, like you know, dealing with alcoholism, dealing with addiction, yes, those are the answers. But I'm interested in what if we don't have to fight so hard to do that work alone?
Sure.
Then I think we can actually, if we can sort of work on that, I don't know that I'm articulating this so well, but like if we don't have to do the same struggle that we did, right? If the young people can do it, like I want them to get into different trouble.
Right.
Right. Have different, different challenges, like uncover different things, you know, like get, like, don't do the same trouble we did.
We'll show them that they can be like a challenging force for good. Like they have this pent up energy that they're saying, hey, we want to help. We want to do meaningful work. Why am I taking this bullshit calculus class? How can I do meaningful work? And nobody, I don't remember ever being taught like, hey, you know, you can actually, you know, yeah, this calculus class, you're taking it, but here's where you can do meaningful work. It might not be the most glamorous, but it's meaningful. But I was never shown that. And probably would have really resonated with me at the time.
What I find is like, what I do in my work is I'm just honest and authentic. Yeah. And I just talk about that stuff because that's what I'm doing. I mean, that's the work that I'm doing mm-hmm. for myself right now. And it resonates. I mean, it's like young people love it because what it feels like to me is that they're running. Yes. I mean, exactly. Right. What if someone had said that to us when we were kids?
I would have taken a much different path.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't regret the path that I took at all, but it would have been much different for me.
How do you certainly. Think? Like, I'm curious to hear.
You know, I probably would have gave less shits about school in general, and just really worked on doing, following my heart a lot more rather than my brain. 'Cause my brain was following kind of what society is telling me to do, whether it be how to act like a man or going to school and things like that. But I don't know. I never really felt fulfilled by it. I more felt like I was just kind of skipping through life and not really helping others in the way that I wanted to. It wasn't as fulfilling, until, you know, the last probably 5 years where I've really leaned into the heart a little bit more and always been kind of a caring guy and soft guy. So, just leaning into that bit more and feeling more comfortable in it. But, I think I would have taken a different path. I don't know if I'd have a master's degree right now in like business and marketing. I don't, you know what I mean? So
seems sort of unlikely. I mean, I don't know you that well, but it just seems
Yeah. So, but everything's a good learning experience and, you know, I'm grateful that A got me to B, but, yeah, I just think there's probably been a different, maybe shorter path, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting for me hearing that and sort of thinking about it of, you know, to me again, like what the world is looking for is like good is, I would say wholeness, right? Like us being, finding our wholeness, finding our maturity and our, and, you know, like I really feel like we're caught in kind of an adolescent stage of development. And it happens to be an unhealthy stage of development where we're actually like our culture is, you know, an adult ish, but still caught as teenagers.
Right.
And so we're not acting like adults. We're actually, we're not like the, you know, so much of, I think the trouble that we're in is trouble that is just because we aren't able to be whole. We don't know what wholeness is. We aren't able to be, you know, like be connected to our hearts. Mm-hmm. We aren't able to actually, you know, just like communicate with respect and honesty and, you know, above board. We're caught in all these like traps and I call it a trance, like the trance of the modern world of thinking that, is running scripts that aren't helpful.
Right. And where do you think that main kind of block is coming from? That block that's keeping us adolescent and from taking the next step. Why are we distracted? Where's that distraction?
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
It's a hard question.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious on your thoughts on it. You know, I go to capitalism and money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easy way to go of just saying that our being broken, our not feeling whole, our feeling, broken is it. Then we then go and see a therapist or we go and get drugs or we go and, you know, go to school. Like a lot of people go to school 'cause they're like, I don't know what to do. Like, what else do I do? And there's like this promise. You look at the advertisements for schools around and they're like, you know, like find your path or like get your next life thing going and this and that and the other thing. And we all know that like so many people leave school like that, that works for some people, but it doesn't work for a lot of people. But you spend money thinking that, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll go to school and then I'll know what I'm going to do.
It's not that easy. Well, you know, I just told you, like I went through all this schooling and stuff and was super focused on it because it was going to get me somewhere. Well, there's no there, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like, I went through all this and, it was more of, like you said, just kind of a distraction. Well, you got to do this so you can get the job, so you can get the AYX, you know, whatever. But what are you going to get?
Yeah.
It's not there.
It's not there. Yeah. So, yeah. I've definitely been thinking, you know, feeling that a lot lately and saying to people, you know, it's just like what I'm like right now is the moment we got.
Yeah.
And that this is there.
Yeah.
Like if we can be fully in this moment, just here, sitting here doing this, you know, talking and just be here and just know that this is life. Like this is it. And if we can be as honest and authentic as we can be here, that's the journey and the struggle to do so.
Right.
You know, that there's not a there to get to. It's not like things are going to, you know, I'm going to get healthier. I'm going to like solve my thing and because once I do, then I'll be over there and then I'm going to have another thing.
Right. Right.
And
the goalpost just moves out further and further and further.
Yeah. And so it's like we're on this treadmill trying to get somewhere and there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be different than the moment right now.
And I think that's kind of how this podcast manifested, I guess. It's just, it just feels good. Like I don't get paid for this. I just threw some money at it and have, you know, I think it's an important topic, and I think it's the only one of the ways that men can be helpful to women. And like, for me too, I'm a bit of an introvert and I really like one-on-one conversations. So I selfishly just get to have cool conversations with other guys and
That's awesome.
And run with it. But I, you know, the minute it starts, you start mixing in capitalism and money with it. And, you know, I'm not completely anti-capitalism. Mm-hmm. Like, it's obviously created, like, I have a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. Like, apartment's okay. I'm living in Portland. Like, I feed myself. Like, it does provide.
Totally. For some. I mean, for those that it provides for, sure.
Sure, sure. And I don't want to, you know, it's got its problems, obviously. But, it does create some pressures to live up to certain expectations that you might not ever be able to meet, no matter what.
Yeah.
Or they just move out further and further.
Yeah.
So I'm curious a little bit more about your upbringing that kind of led you to this
point. I also want to come back to your question. I like that question of like, can we go there first?
Yeah, let's go there.
You know, so I think capitalism and money, like, what was the question? The question is like, why are we stuck?
Yeah. Why are we stuck in that adolescent place? Why is there a ceiling there that we're
breakthrough? Right. And like, and the trance of the modern world. We're talking about that. Like what is the trance? Why is it there? And how do we get out of it?
Mm.
And, I mean, there's a lot of pain, you know, there's a lot of feeling what we're feeling that is not always pleasant.
Hmm.
You know, there's trauma in all of our lives. There's there's moments we have that we're embarrassed by or uncomfortable or whatever they are. And it's hard to go into those places, but there's a great story. That one of my teachers, Michael Mead, who's a mythologist and storyteller, he tells all kinds of stories. But one of the one that I think of is a traveler is walking down a road and comes to a guy crawling around in the ground. It's nighttime and there's a street light and he's crawling around. And the traveler says, you know, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm looking for my keys. I lost my keys. And the traveler goes, well, hey, would you like some help? And so they're crawling around and they're looking around in the light and they're, you know, the light's shining. It's, you know, it's there and they're looking around and they spent a long time looking for it. Finally, the traveler says to the guy, is this where you lost your keys? The guy says, no, I lost them over there in the dark. And it's like, well, why are you looking here? Well, because the light is here.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, we aren't willing, like we're really unwilling to go to the dark places and see that, you know, it's like, we know that the answer is over there. We know we have to go into the darkness of our own lives. And yet we're really some combination of incapable or unwilling, you know, again, there's not the guidance to know how to do that work, you know, to be in a relationship with someone, to be in some of the complicated, you know, interactions with men and women these days, or men and men, or women and women, or, you know, just including everyone as much as we can, that relationships are complicated.
Right.
And if we think they're just going to be easy and fun and like, okay, this is going to be great. You know, it's just going to be, that's not the way it works.
No.
And we wouldn't want it to be that way. No. I don't think. Cause like all the meaning and learning and important stuff happens in the darkness.
Yeah.
It happens in the shadows. And yeah.
You know, it's just pretty amazing how suffering is inevitable. I mean, we're all going to suffer at some point and to some degree. And, you know, we shy away from it. And that's where the real work is done. Right. I mean, you know, I'm pretty open. Like I go to counseling every week and I leave there pissed off. I leave there sad. Sometimes I leave there really happy. But mostly it's like, it's hard work facing these things and diving in. And some people are either, you know, ashamed of it or just scared of it and they'd rather stay in the light and look for their keys to figure out how to unlock it. But, it seems like, especially for men, we just don't even want to deal.
Yeah.
Don't even want to deal.
It's so hard. I mean, even I think the way that you found me was the talk that's coming up at Yoga Union.
Yep. June 15th.
June 15th. 6 to 7:30. Yeah, and that's, I mean, really, that's, you know, there's, I don't know how many men are going to be there, but it's a taste.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I mean, a worthwhile thing to come to, and you know, it's going to open up possibilities of more of the work that.
Well, that's interesting. That you think it'll be mostly women?
It's going to be all, I mean, no, a lot of women want to come actually, interestingly, which is another really interesting thing to explore. But it's only men. Yeah.
Okay.
by men for men.
Yeah, cool.
Todd and I are running it. So.
Yeah, that's in it.
Okay, so why were we there? Because that's where you found me and...
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about suffering. You were telling the story about, you know, not wanting to kind of go into the dark and still talking about that ceiling of being in adolescence.
Right, and the trance of the modern world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, men not wanting to go there. I think we're also just saying that, you know, I definitely am feeling like, wait, there was something there. I can't quite get it. It'll jump back. It's hard to go to the darkness. And I think it's hard for men to go in there.
Overtly. It's hard, I think, for men, you know, just from what I've seen. Again, I've only done like five episodes of this, but it's pretty amazing when, first of all, when I ask other men to do it, they're like, well, I don't really have anything to say or anything to offer, or I'm not really sure, or like, I don't know what value I can bring. And yeah, we do talk about masculinity, but the idea too is just to get men to open up in some way. And once you get them sat down and you just let them loose, most guys have something to say and they'll just go on for 2 hours. Yeah. And if it's all of a sudden, it's like, well, that's the work. You do have something to say, but it's hard. It's hard for them to make a decision like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go open up. You know, that's what I'm kind of seeing now is just like a lot of guys have a lot of things they want to share, but they don't want to just go do it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary for a lot of reasons. I mean, there's the shame piece,
sure,
which we all carry. And I don't know if you know Brene Brown, but a lot of her work and, you know, the idea of, is there something about me that if you know that you'll reject me or that I won't be worthy of love and belonging?
Yeah.
And there's a piece of like that you won't like me, right? If I say something weird or I tell you all my stuff, you know, you're going to be like, whoa, dude, he's weird. You know, I don't like him. Which is hard, right? I mean, there's shame and fear of that. Mm-hmm. But the real trick, of course, is that it's me.
Yeah.
Is there something about me that I am rejecting?
Yeah.
You know, that those mistakes as an adolescent, you know, those moments that I crossed a line that I wish I hadn't crossed. Can I accept those about myself and just say, hey, you know what? I'm a human being.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, going back to the guy in the gorge, you know, I mean, part of his journey is saying like, can he accept
what he did? Yeah.
And just forgive himself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people might get really pissed at that.
A lot of insecurities are just that, right? There are stuff to deal with. I mean, I know I have them that there's one or two things I just won't talk about with people because it's like, my first thought is what you said. It's like, I'm going to be unlovable to you, or you're going to think I'm weird or something like that. But it's really a thing that I haven't accepted about myself yet, or I'm not loving myself yet. And it's hard to talk about those kind of things.
Yeah.
Even with a counselor.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of, I get like shaky and like, oh, there's this thing. She's just kind of like, oh,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I can, you know, and I'm sure both men and women experience that, but especially for men who just don't practice even talking about anything together, you know, it's really hard to go there.
Really hard. And so, you know, in my work training for the unknown, you know, it's like, that's what we do is we hang out in those places, is we talk about the stuff we were not supposed to talk about that men aren't, you know, that is what taboo or whatever it is. And this is again, where I go to the place where I'm like, I don't like playing by the rules because there's, you know, there's pieces of, you know, I want to be able to give a kid a hug.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be able to tell him about, you know, when I was masturbating as a kid, you know, and got caught, or, you know, when I was so insecure about that, you know, like he needs to hear those stories.
Sure.
Like they need to hear about
this. It's happened to all of us.
Right. You know, but like, if we can't talk about that, then it becomes this weird thing.
It's a weird thing.
You aren't supposed to talk about masturbation or like the size of your cock.
Right.
You know, but that's like a weird thing that we aren't supposed to talk about, but like, no, why?
We have a really still weird half puritanical thing in this country too, that doesn't help, and especially boys, then they get this pent up frustration, and you know, I'm not excusing the way that they're acting out, but it's become really toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Just from simply us not talking to them about those type of things that you just said.
Yep.
And so I guess what tips would you have for for parents or even like older siblings on how to kind of lessen that toxic masculinity in younger men.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious, like when you think toxic masculinity, like how would you, what would you?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's even hard for me to define. It's, you know, I was going to kind of ask you for an overarching definition, but I see it really as like destructive in a way that's kind of like angry and taking, you know, if so, say a boy is rejected by a woman or a man rejected by a lady, then it's like their fault or something. They get angry. So the response is always anger. The response is to seek more power over the person. And I think the power struggle is the key part of it, where they always just want to have power over somebody else to get what they want, and kind of satisfy their need.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see it.
Right. I just watched the movie 9 to 5. Do you remember the movie 9 to 5?
No.
It's just funny. Like I think it's from 1980. So ooh, I was 10.
It's probably good.
It's Dolly Parton and Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda.
Okay. I think I've seen the, it's coming to mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting watching it, you know, it's like, cause it plays out the, you know, there's the boss and, he just, you know, he's blatantly, you know, trying to, you know, fuck the secretary, Dolly Parton, you know, and it was like spilling stuff on the floor so we can look at her tits. You know, just like, I mean, it's like egregiously horrible. And that's like, that feels like toxic masculinity,
right?
You know, like that feels like what is going on with this guy that he can get away with it. But then also that like, what, like how sad and tragic and just like, what a hurting dude that guy is.
Yeah. Just always looking to take.
Yeah, and looking at and the power piece.
The power piece is really comes to mind a lot with it.
Yeah, I have to admit, like I get a little bit confused in this territory because I'm like, wait, so like, you know, there's a lot of interesting conversations happening about power and about, you know, where the line is and masculinity and I think I would go about it in this way rather than like, cause I want healthy, mature conversations about desire, and about, our shame and about our, you know, and just about our relational interactions. I don't think this is a man issue. Mm. I think it's a human, and right. I actually think it's, I mean, I think it's a human issue, but I think it's particularly a Western world thing going on here, and probably the United States. Cause I think that the way that men and women interact and the kind of, energy around sexuality and around desire is different in different places in the world.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
you've been traveling.
So I've lived in Paris and London and South Korea and, especially in Paris, it's a lot different there. And then traveling through Italy, oh my God, it's just a completely different world as far as sexuality goes from men and between men and women. Just way different.
I'm so curious what you see in height.
You know, it's interesting because or in Spain, even when I was in Spain, women like to be, from my observation,
And I'll just say like, so, I mean, it's just interesting. Like it's like dangerous to talk, right? It's hard to talk about because you don't want to like say the wrong thing.
Right.
And that drives me crazy.
But observationally, men like to catcall and women like it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you find me attractive because you're catcalling me. And it's like a sexy thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying that should work here, but, it's different, right? Men are a lot more aggressive.
In Italy,
right. In Spain, they're just a lot more aggressive. Mm-hmm. They're almost kind of like a, you know, an American woman probably would be really offended and really, you know, but also coming from an American man, if they did that, it would seem really slimy. Mm-hmm. But over there, I was kind of like, oh, I kind of get it. It was kind of sexy that what that dude just did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's a different relationship that they have going on, and less puritanical.
Right. And you know, a lot of people criticize feminism. I mean, a lot of men who I know who, you know, are just really frustrated at feminism because it feels like it just castrated men and men's desire.
Sure.
And, you know, and so then we get into this like, well, you know, men have been assholes and been in charge for a long time, which is, you know, true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, yes, there wants to be a counterbalance to that. But like the you know, the movement that's happened in many ways is it's really left men in a hard, difficult spot. And I, you know, again, like I'm a white man, you know, so it's like, right. And so I just like, you know,
but I'll say this though, from guys like us who are, you know, those big hearted guys, I'm especially like, what the fuck, where am I in this?
Totally.
I'm like, I guess I'm even further on the sideline now.
Right.
Cause I don't want to do anything wrong.
Right.
Like zero.
And
that's problematic.
Yes.
Because I feel like for myself, it's like, you know, I'm probably the type of guy that should be in the mix and having these conversations. Cause I can have the conversations like calmly and look somebody in the eyes and be reasonable.
Right.
But now I'm kind of like, well, I don't know where the fuck I need to be.
Right. Right. You know, and like I, you know, right. I mean, in the way that I run this deal for myself is just like, I'm going to say what I want to say. And if there's an issue, like I don't, like I'm again, like I get confused about power and I know that I have it. I know that I have it in a lot of ways that I don't see and I don't understand. And I think I'm a pretty thoughtful, caring guy, you know, and I'm like not trying to be an asshole. And I'm not trying to be like, I treat people like people. I treat people like human beings, whether they're black or white or Hispanic or men or women or trans or whatever. You know, like I'm not, you know, maybe that's fucking ignorant to say.
You're on team human.
I'm on team human. I totally am, you know, and I'm sure I say things that offend people, you know, and so then I want to have a conversation about it. I'm willing to understand and like be open to like, I know that I crossed the line, but I also just want to be honest and authentic, and my intention is caring.
Yeah,
you know, my intention is to is wholeness.
Right,
is to treat people with dignity and respect everyone that I interact with. You know, and I'm gonna fuck it up.
Right,
right. But like, so, one of I think the interesting places that this plays out is ecstatic dance. Like this dynamic. Have you explored?
I haven't personally explored it, but I've meant like I read about it and. I'm just kind of starting to learn a little bit more about it. So tell me.
It feels to me like, so I'm really like, I think the way that we do this in the United States, we are really mixed up about desire and about how to care for each other and how to be attracted to each other. And, that thing you talked about, like, here I am a white man, a caring white man. And now this Me Too stuff. And it's just like, holy shit. What do I do with my desire? Like, should I just shut it off? Like maybe I shouldn't have it because it's bad and it manifests and I start like doing damage. So I'm just going to try not to have desire, you know, and that is just a really bad idea.
That doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. Yeah. And two, it manifests, you can't shut it off.
No,
like we're human beings.
We're humans.
And I think that, like what I would say, you know, about Harvey Weinstein or Stein or whatever his name is, you know, and those guys is like that is what happens when you get really unhealthy desire and like pent up, like just confusion and inauthenticity and inability to go to those dark places and like just be honest and open with yourself and who you are.
Sure.
When you can't express that stuff and you get caught in the like not being willing to talk about masturbation or penis size or desire or whatever. Like if we don't ever talk about that stuff, it gets pent up and it builds and it builds and it builds. And then when it comes out, it is really fucking toxic.
It's really bad.
And really bad. And
violent.
That I think is what's playing out.
Yeah.
You know, so like my commitment is to say, no, let's have these conversations so that we as men can learn how to have desire.
Sure.
You know, how to talk about having sex with women, about how to talk about how to touch and how beautiful touch and intimacy is. Mm. Right. How amazing it is for young. I mean, I work with young guys a lot and we talk about like when, you know, like they're, you know, teenagers and they're like running all kinds of like stuff that they don't even know what the fuck it is. But they just want to like, they're horny and they're like, woo, let's go.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, I'm able to talk to them about that and say like, okay, so like you don't go from like kissing someone to fucking someone.
Right.
There's like so much beautiful territory in between there.
Yeah.
You know, of like
exploration.
Hold her hand or his hand.
Yeah.
You know, and feel what that feels like. Feel how arousing it is. And then and you'll notice, if you do so, you'll notice an invitation to touch her arm or his arm, you know, and then you'll notice an invitation to open the shoulder, you know, and just like, and you can be in these like beautiful, sensuous, like tiny explorations of connecting to a human being.
Yeah.
And using touch is another way of connecting.
And to me, like, and this has been hard for me to define too, because there's so many levels of it. But what you're describing to me is like teaching a man to be in touch with his feminine and being okay with it. And yeah. It's natural and it's beautiful. Yeah. Cause they're definitely not encouraged to do it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm with you too. I'm on like team human. We're all just humans, like having varying degrees of masculinity and femininity. And we all kind of go in between them. But the thing that's different about men, I think, is biologically we have more testosterone, and that's going to lead to your violent outrages. Like, you know, when we're frustrated, we're probably going to be assholes. Yeah. And just biologically speaking, testosterone does that to you.
Yeah.
Not an excuse, but it's there. It's a danger that we need to address before we get there.
Yeah. And I guess I'm curious about, like, yes, danger, but also like important.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we have to be able to stand up for ourselves. We have to be able to protect and, you know, and like just what, you know, I mean, it's like, it's part of we can't go, I wish I could change that thing.
You know, I like being a man.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with saying that. Like, I like being a man. I like feeling like a man. I like doing things that make me feel like a man, even though those things are becoming like, I don't really know what makes me feel like a man, but I know it when I feel it, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I don't feel like I'm doing any harm when I do those things, but like if I lift something heavy or do some shit like that, it's like, yeah, sometimes I like to do that kind of stuff. Right. You know, but it should be okay to do that. You know, there's that old saying, you know, oh, just boys being boys. And I think that's problematic in many ways. But I also think it's like we need to figure out how to let boys be boys.
Yeah. And men be men.
And men be men.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that looks like in a healthy way.
Yeah. I mean, one, it's like just being willing to have conversations like this. And then again, with the young guys, like being able to talk to them about sex and run that energy, you know, and
specifically with other men.
I think so.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, and know that they're like, I mean, there's so many directions to go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's okay.
It's exciting. It's, you know, the place that I went with that was I have had so many young guys. I mean, I've been in rooms of, you know, hundreds of men and Michael Mead retreats and others where it's like young guys stand up and just look at the old guys and say, look, please hurry and get out of your fucking depressed, suicidal, miserable place.
No.
We need you. We need you to show us that we aren't going to be like that when we're gray haired and bald. You know, we need you guys to figure the fuck out for us. Cause like if I'm looking out into that future and I don't see men who I want to be like, and who are like caring and thoughtful and like doing good work in the world, how in the fuck, I'm suicidal now.
Yeah.
It gives me no
hope.
I'm not going to make it. They flat out, they were like, you have to fucking figure this out because I'm not going to make it.
Oof.
You know? And it's like to me, there's like men, you know, like, yes, we got to be in those places, you know, and just saying like there's work for us to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I guess I had a dad who was kind of a sensitive guy, and he just always was, you know, hugging, oh, I love you. He always verbally tell us how much he loved him, and he'd do anything for us. So I always had kind of a nice guy that would help me kind of open up and be the person that I am today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's still other things missing from that, where it's like he was both my mom and my dad. But he was like, you can't be fully either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still some things missing, but I did have a good guide. And it's so critical as a young man to still have that guide.
Yep.
And many don't.
And the world, you know, I mean, you just look around at the male role models in the world today, the leaders, I don't know, there aren't very many compelling. But something I think is really important about masculinity, and something you said just a moment ago made me think of it, which is, you know, you're talking about yourself and like how, you know, being a man, like liking being a man.
Yeah.
You know, and I, again, like I go to this place when around, this is like my academic sort of confusion thing of like, I don't like, sometimes I get like, wait, what, like power, you know, I get a little bit lost in those places. But the way I think of it is like, if I were to define masculinity, it's being ourselves.
Mm.
You are a man. I am a man. if I can be fully myself, if I can just be myself without, you know, be angry, be sad, be lonely, be excited, be erotic, be like have desire, yeah, you know, want this, want, you know, and just like that, like I am a man. And so if I'm just me, then I'm, then I'm being a man. Yeah. And I'm actually think I'm being, as you know, a whole healthy man willing to, you know, look at my shit and be in my life in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I don't know what the definition of that is exactly. You know, like I'm nicer than I want to be, I think I've realized recently, thanks to a woman, right, you know, where she was like, oh, you're really nice. And she was like, you know, I don't know if I want you to be so nice all the time.
Huh? Yeah. I've got that. I've had that before.
You know, like I need, well, like where the fuck is the fire? Yeah. You know, where is the, like, you know, just bring it.
Yeah. That's confusing though, too, at the same time.
It is. Well, okay. So yeah. And that, yeah, it is. It is. But, and I think it's important territory for all of us.
Yeah.
And that's where the ecstatic dance, we're, that's where,
right. Well, I mean, I dig around in that. That's, that one kind of touched me a little bit because it's like so many times I've been labeled the sweet guy, but it's like, hey, you're a sweet guy, but that's not what I'm looking for. So it was almost like, yeah, that's cool. But like, nah.
Yeah, so that's what was that one. Like when it touched that place in you?
It's kind of a shitty thing because I like being a sweet guy. Hmm. You know, when I'm fully myself, I like to be a sweet guy. It's just how I was raised. It's, you know, how I saw my dad interacting with women. And I mean, it's just when I'm myself. So it kind of hurts, you know, when you have yourself rejected, when you're fully who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and when I lean into it and I feel good. And so it's like, yeah, you're a sweet guy, but that's not for me.
Right.
So it's like, fuck.
There's so many interesting questions in there for me well, one would go, you know, are there women out there who want the sweet guy?
Oh, sure.
Right. And sure, so, there are.
Absolutely.
Right. Sure there are.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a place of, is that how much of a learning edge is that for you? You know, of like, yeah, liking being the sweet guy. And this is me, right? I'll speak for me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Is, I realize that being nice, like I'm afraid to be not nice.
Yeah.
Cause what happens is when I get angry or I get direct, like if I bring, my anger or my dissatisfaction or even, you know, just that, whatever energy you would call that, you know, I was going to say masculine. I don't like that though, but like forceful energy. Mm. I get really scared that I'm going to hurt someone. And then I have a lot of shame around, for me, I have a lot of shame around hurting people.
Yeah.
That if I hurt someone, I know my shame reaction is that I stop feeling like I belong and I'm worthy.
Right.
And so for me, I've learned to be nice. I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm really now practicing not being so nice.
Yeah.
And it's like so much that edge of, it's so fucking scary.
What does that look like for you then? You're coming from a guy who's like, obviously not able to do that either. Yeah. It would be scary for me to do that too, because I wouldn't even know. I would probably just end up, it would come across as fake and it'd probably just be an asshole.
Yeah.
So, but how have you found, what successful things have you found?
Honesty.
Yeah.
I mean, it like authenticity and honesty.
Yeah.
And being willing to make a mistake, you know, to fuck it up.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, just to be able to say to someone, you know, a woman like, you know, I find you attractive, and it's really scary to say that. Mm. You know, and then, and because in my experience of it, it's true.
Yeah.
So whether I say it or not,
right,
it's true because I feel it, and right, and generally she would sense it.
Yeah.
You know, and so we can sit in the ambiguity of that moment.
Or you can just say it.
Here it is.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, I don't do this because I'm not in the situation to do it, but, you know, just like, I think it would be okay to say, you know, like, I find you really attractive and, you know, I'm really horny and I think it would be fun to go play.
Yeah.
And then there it is.
Right.
Because it's just true.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, bold. Yeah. And then she could say, fuck you. Or could say, like, wow, that was really bold. Sure. Which actually has, you know, like, I think that that's actually a response that... I have a question there. Like, I like that you would get that, you know, like in Italy, when you said, you know, like when someone says you're beautiful, you know, it's like, thank you.
She'd be flattered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally flattered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course I am.
Right.
Why wouldn't you say that if I was beautiful?
Yeah. And thanks for noticing.
Yeah. Thanks for noticing. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean I want to fuck you. Yeah, or maybe it does.
No,
but
I think in that case too, a lot of what I've heard and read and seen, it's just like, oh yeah, thank you, see you later. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah I mean, who wouldn't, you know? And like, if someone came up to you and said, like, wow, you are really an attractive guy, like, I just, you know, love your eyebrows and your eyes are just really beautiful,
I feel
like
great.
You wouldn't be like, fuck you.
Yeah,
you
know, like, no, I feel great,
fucking asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be like, wow. And like, the rest of your day you'd be like, oh my god, you know. Yeah. Like, awesome.
Do you think that is reverse for true, though, with a man going up to a woman, though, here in this country?
Right. I mean, it's...
Should it be?
I
don't know.
I would rather err on the side of... So here's the thing. They were quite, like, an interesting place for me is like, I think that would be good.
Yeah.
I also think of myself doing it. And again, like, the like, on the human, team human... You know, I'm doing it from a place of, I feel pretty grounded in myself these days and pretty confident with my, you know, just like, I have a lot, I have plenty of shit that I'm unraveling.
Well, daily, we all do.
Right? All do. But I don't right now feel like an adolescent boy walking around in a man's body.
Yeah.
I feel like I've worked really hard to claim my manhood, you know, and say, like, you know what, my little boy, like, I love him and I'm going to miss him, but he is now gone.
Yeah.
As is my teenage boy. You know, I am now a man and I am declaring it and I'm standing in it and I'm willing to do the work to be in that.
And willing to have the discussion if it causes a problem.
Totally. Yeah. I'm willing to look you in the eye and like, and be right there.
Well, that's part of being a man.
And that's part of it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so it's not just like, yeah, hey, woo, nice tits. Yeah. Woo! Yeah. You know, like, let's have a beer. You know, yeah. Like, bleh. Like, that's not it. You know, I mean, that's, you can try that.
Sure.
You know, and some people, and some, you know, like, that happens all the time and, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't particularly value or honor it, but
very adolescent.
And, you know,
very,
it's like,
sophomoric.
Yeah. And it's like, and I think a lot of the conversation we're having about toxic masculinity and, like, Me Too and, like, a lot of this, the conversation we're having is caught at that level of, you know, discourse.
Right.
Where all we're doing is getting mad at each other and, like, being pissed off about, well, you're doing this and you're doing this, and we aren't in a, it's not a dialogue.
Well, it's just a lot of shut up and listen to me.
Right. I'm right. You're wrong.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, it's not the right fucking conversation,
right,
in my opinion.
Well, it's not a conversation.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like, how do we get into that other place, you know, where, like, can we be honest with each other and be attracted to each other and have desire for one another, you know, and be able to say it and talk about it as adults.
Yeah.
You know, and make mistakes. I mean, right. You know, and I get a little confused by that, because, like, I know a lot of, like, adult men who, like, I would be a little nervous about them, like, being really honest, you know.
Sure.
Like, oh god, you're really, this is gonna go really poorly.
You just clinch up waiting for them to,
like,
say something.
Right. It's like, oh fuck, like,
yeah.
I can see that you're wanting that, but, like, if you say it, it's not gonna go, you know. I'm intrigued by that piece of how do we have the mature, healthy, whole conversations when we're in the process of becoming whole and healthy and mature.
Yeah, I think one thing that women, I think they understand but they don't want to hear, is that a lot of women reinforce traditional notions of masculinity in men. Probably don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Right or wrong.
Right.
But it's true.
Yep.
But it's true. Yeah. You know, they can say that they want these open, vulnerable guys, but then you can look to actually what, who they're attracted to or what's going on in relationships. And you're like, well, that's not what you're saying. You're not validating what you want, which is a hard conversation to have. I mean, I can sit here and have it with you, but, like, some of the women I know in my life, I couldn't even, like, whoa,
right.
I can't approach that conversation. I can't.
Yeah.
I'll probably have people messaging me for even saying that, but I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe that a lot of the how are men validated? Women. Might not be the reverse, might not be true. Women might not be as validated, get their validation through men as much as men get it through women.
Yeah. I think what I noticed for myself is how much validation I need and want and maybe didn't get for who I am.
Yeah.
And so I know I can feel how hungry I am for that.
Yeah.
And know kind of in my brain, right, that like, I mean, this is very real for me like these days, which is like, I know that ultimately I have to accept myself, that's where the real gold, and you know, like I have to really accept myself, which I work really hard to do that, you know, and just say, here, you know, I'm doing the best I got. To have that validated by someone, for me, of the opposite sex, and to have someone see that and value it and want to like hold me and love me in that feels so amazing, like earth-shatteringly amazing.
I'm 100% in the same boat. A lot of what you said is like, you know, being unseen or just having somebody see you. That's because when you're kind of authentically yourself all the time, you're not, especially when you're kind of like the sweet guy type of thing, like you're not, people don't always see it and they don't always validate it, especially from the opposite sex. But if somebody I just recently had somebody go, you know, yeah, I go, you know, I made a comment like, yeah, I just kind of like to go do my own thing and just kind of like to be me. And she just goes, yeah, and that's why we love you. And that lasted me for like a week. I was high for like a week.
Yeah.
And it's not even like a person I'm like even remotely like attracted to or whatever, but like it just felt so good. Right. It felt so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, and that's so, you know, when you said like, you know, male, female, like who wants validation? Like, I think we all, I think we are starving. And I think this might be part of like United States and the like, you know, trance of the modern world is we are starving for affirmation. I mean, like teachers can't touch kids.
Right.
You can't get a hug from your therapist.
Yeah.
You're searching for something.
I was just trying to think back. I've had pretty much all female teachers all growing up. And I'm trying to think if I've ever maybe had a hug, kind of like a side hug from one of them when I was younger. But I was thinking about that. And you're right. I don't remember ever.
It's like we're, you know, again, this goes back to my like rule following thing of like, we have some really, really bad rules in our culture, which is just like, we can't affirm like getting a hug from someone when you're having a hard day a great day.
I love a fucking hug.
I mean, it's amazing. Right. And then we say like, we can't touch kids cause maybe someone is going to be a pedophile. Like, yes, someone is going to be a pedophile, but fucking A.
Yeah. Some of those kids, I bet you a hug would be life-changing. I literally mean life-changing.
Right.
Because they might not be getting any of it at home.
Right. Well, here's what I really think about this is like, we freak out about the kid who's going to be abducted. Like, we're so fucking protective and maybe the puritanical, you know, whatever. Like, we're so worried about the kids being abducted because when a kid gets abducted or gets like, you know, sexual, you know, pedophile kind of thing. Like, it's horrible. Right. It's horrible. But it's really obvious and visible. So everyone's like, oh, kid got abducted. So we have to now like not let our kids be outside anymore. Right. And so now we have, now a whole generation of kids hasn't been outside feeling the trust and the freedom of being able to be outside and like knowing that like we trust you enough to when some weird fucking guy drives up in a car that you'll come inside.
Stranger danger.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 30. And growing up, I grew up on a little town on the Oregon coast, Walport.
Nice.
And, but we, you know, we used to go just play in the woods and, you know, grandma, grammy would say, just be back by dinner. Just listen for the whistle.
Yep.
We go take off for 8 hours and just be gone in the woods doing whatever, or just down the street or on the beach or whatever. And there was no fear of like, oh, some pedophile out there lurking around. But that sense of freedom that we had was unbelievable.
Doesn't exist anymore.
Does it?
It really does not exist anymore. I mean, I grew up in Chicago with that same freedom, right? Like I'm wandering around the city as like a kid.
Yeah.
And I'm fine, you know, and I was fine. You know, it's like, Don't talk to strangers is such an idiotic idea.
Yeah.
It's don't talk to the wrong stranger.
Sure.
And we have to figure out who the right, like you have, the only way to learn who the right stranger is and the wrong stranger is to talk to the fucking people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I think, and it's to what there's, it's like this perfect storm too of we're just shutting down people's ability to communicate altogether verbally. You know, you have, don't go outside and don't talk to people, stay inside. Also, here's a smartphone in your hand and you can just text them. We're not going to call each other. Like a phone is like, we don't have phones anymore. We have these computers with an app. That's the phone. It's like the phone call has been reduced to an app, but nobody does it anymore. And we all text. Yeah. So now you talk to younger people and they're like super, super awkward.
Super. Well, yeah.
Super awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one other thing I just wanted to say about the stranger danger and that, all that kind of piece. But, because I have a lot to say about the cell phone.
Yeah. We'll get there. I have some questions on that too.
Let me just see if I can get it. So the fear that we have of someone getting abducted, right? Again, horrible. We don't wish for that. It causes a massive amount of harm for that kid and that family.
Mm.
What's less obvious, but I think far more insidious, is the whole structure of not letting our kids be outside and not feeling trusted and feeling like the world is a scary place. And we can't measure the impact of that. Like we can measure a kid getting abducted or sexually abused.
Right.
Like that's in like that's a news headline. That's very clear.
Very tangible, very,
very
bad.
Right.
It's bad.
Yeah. Clearly. Clearly bad.
Yeah.
But we overreact. And then we end up with, you know, the impact of that, of kids not being, you know, again, being able to roam outside, of trusting their instinct, of learning those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is causing depression and anxiety and all kinds of shit that you're seeing all over the place that would never be tracked, traced back. Again, it reminds me of a story of a certain, this was like from NPR or something, or This American Life, of a surgeon. Or, you know, a girl got a concussion in a game, comes into the ER, the physician looks at her and does the whole like spinal thing, you know, the whole spinal evaluation, and says like, look, she's fine. You know, she's really, really fine. There's like a, you know, 0.5% chance that there might be something, but she checks out, she's okay, everything's. And the dad is like, you know, we got to get a CAT scan. And the doctor's like, you know, I could order a CAT scan. A, it's going to cost a lot of money. And B, you know, the radiation that she's going to be exposed to is going to be, the chances of something bad happening because of that is going to be more than the chance of happening because of the condition that she has right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's expensive. It's potentially going to cause more harm. And you want it.
Yeah.
And I'm safer as a doctor if I order it.
Yeah.
Because what'll happen is if we do the exposure to the CAT scan, the radiation,
mm-hmm.
it won't show up for like 30 years. And there's no fucking way that when she gets a brain tumor 30 years from now, that someone's going to be like, oh, when you were 12, you had that CAT scan. And they're never going to go back to that doctor and go, you shouldn't have ordered that test. It's not going to be able to be traced back to that.
Right.
And yet she, right. We insist that she get the CAT scan because it's safe, right? It's safer. We don't want, you know, that kind of thing. And to me, that's the same thing as the stranger and we overreact to things.
Sure.
And then we lose our actual like humanity in a certain.
Yeah. We're not looking down the road too far, are we?
It's just easy to get, it's easy to get
it's fear. Easy to put a Band-Aid on it.
Fear.
I mean, it's easy to, you know, you can go to, it's easy to drown that fear in booze. It's easy to drown that fear in drugs. It's easy to do all the things that'll solve now. It's just to ease the pain. But it's all an overreaction. We're not wallowing in that suffering, like we said.
We aren't able to be in the pain and the reality of just our current situation, you know, of our current situation, and go like, you know what, it's like as a dad, it's so... Every night I put my kids to sleep and I just think, God, if I lost one of them, it would be so devastating.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it'd be devastating.
I think sounds like a very natural parent.
I think every parent does that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know my brother and his wife said the same. My cousins, my sisters all have kids, and it's just like they have this innate parent fear. But I think too is what we're talking about is a way over correction.
Right. Yeah. Because yes, exactly. Of like, oh my God. So now I have to keep them. Yeah. I have to keep them.
Lock them up.
Yeah. So that nothing happens to them in the world. And it's like, Jesus. That's going to cause more, right?
Well, that's one of the things too. I appreciate about my sister. She'll send me these videos. She's very, she's just like an amazing mother, right? Mm. She's got two little ones and like, but she'll send me these videos that I just love because it's like her son who's like, when he just turned like 4 and he's like standing on top of the couch, like just in his underwear and she's just back filming and he's just jumping like Supermaning off the couch. Just landing, nice. And she's just like, "Oh my god!" But she's letting him do it.
Yep.
You know, or she filmed like her little daughter who just turned 1. Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Yeah, yes, yeah,
yeah. She just turned 1, and she was showing her trying to. She just started walking, so she's just trying to like sneak off the couch. You know, it's kind of doing that little butt. Kind of right, slide thing, and it's like I'm watching this video. I'm like, she's gonna go over, and sure enough, she just falls right off. But like. She's going to be fine, mm-hmm. but she let her do it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to just let kids do that and explore their limits.
Yeah.
You know, mentally, physically, just explore themselves a little bit.
Yeah. I love the walking. I mean, walking is such it's another fun, like story anecdote kind of thing. You know, of when kids learn to walk, it's full of failure.
Sure.
It's full of hurt and tears and like pain and frustration and, you know, and the whole time. Right? They're sliding off the couch and like, just like, there she goes. Right? What are we doing? Mm-hmm. We got the video camera out. We got the like, go, oh, look at that. She took a half of a step. Yeah. Oh my God. You know, like every moment is like, oh my God, it's amazing. You know, she just fell. Yeah. She hit her head. She fell, right? Like, oh my God. You know, like, do you see that? Did you get that? You know, and like, and we have this huge joyful reaction to a huge amount of failure and fucking it up.
Right.
And it's the last time in our lives that happens.
Yeah.
Because then from there we start to go, and then, you know, I mean, for most people, you know, your sister, it's a beautiful example of a kid jumping off the couch, you know, but if like, it's easy to not celebrate the failures, you know, sure. when things start to quote unquote matter in school and all those, you know.
We cut off the opportunity to fail now. Like we were talking about this coddling and overreaction. We cut off the opportunity to failure. And so then, you know, come teenage time when a boy gets rejected by a girl and it's failure, then what do they do?
Right.
What do they do?
Right. Right? It's really hard.
It's hard. They don't know how to fail.
And I mean, this is where I go with the phones, right? I mean, what I call phones is it's like, let me get this right. You know, it's like, it's anti-discomfort device.
Sure.
Right? Like, don't ever feel a moment of discomfort.
Never.
Or adversity. You know, like,
I don't know how many times I've stood in line at the grocery store and just stood there without my phone. And you look like a freak.
Right.
It's like just standing there.
That's right.
Just looking around. Yeah. You like look at somebody and they're like, whoa, what are you doing?
Right. And it's like we are losing, all of us, kids and adults, what I see is like we're losing the ability to have those small moments of discomfort. Or just standing there and just stand there.
Just stand there.
Just fucking stand there and look like a fool.
Yeah.
Or just enjoy.
Observe.
Right. Just observe.
Just observe weird human interaction happening. It's great.
Or breathe.
It's great.
You're just hang.
Especially in Portland.
Right.
A lot of weird shit going on around.
All kinds of crazy
Look
stuff.
Up.
Or like beautiful people and be like, oh my God, he's beautiful or she's beautiful or like just whatever. You know, it's like, and what's happening, like you just got it, you know, is like, if we can't be uncomfortable in those small moments.
Hmm.
Which, you know, just small all throughout our day.
Yeah.
How on earth, when we get rejected by that person or we make a mistake, we ask them out and they say no, or we try to touch them and they're like, oh, freaked out. And you know, how are we going to handle that or not getting into college or choosing a college?
Sure.
When we can't handle 3 seconds of standing at the grocery store in discomfort. It's like you can't lift the, 100-pound weight.
Sure.
Without lifting the 1 pound weight, yeah. and we have these devices in our pockets and we're giving them to our kids.
Well, it's pretty amazing. We see a lot of men making horrible mistakes right now. And so the overreaction is we can't let our boys make any mistakes.
Don't let them make any mistakes. And I've recently talked to young guys about Me Too and about stuff like that. And they're like, I'm afraid to look at girls and I'm afraid to talk to them. And I was like,
problematic.
I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
And these are good kids. These are kids who are like, I think all kids are good kids, you know, who are many of them are misunderstood and like, we just have to do better seeing them and, you know, but it's like,
I'm with you on that.
That is so, so bad
that
our young boys are like not being willing to like look at girls or boys, you know, again, boys, whatever, you know, whoever they're attracted to
and feel
self-conscious about it,
yeah.
You know, and that's been true for a long time. And I was like, you know, so scared to look at girl, you know, I was totally ashamed and shy and all this kind of stuff.
This is a different type of fear, though.
It's different. They're going to get in trouble. That they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, their desire is wrong.
Their desire is wrong. That I should not have desire.
It's a hard one to balance too, because like I feel like this movement. Obviously, you hear about stories and you're like, Christ Almighty! It's like this was due.
Yep.
But at the same time, like, where's the overreaction?
I'm not sure
how to support the women. I guess like conversations like the podcast was a little bit, this is how we can support women. I'll just talk to other guys.
Yeah.
but how can I support women and still like say, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because that's also like, hey, fuck you. We're not pumping the brakes. We've been suffering for all this time, which I recognize.
Totally.
And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm personally not sorry because I don't have anything to be sorry for. But for your suffering, but like the overreaction, I don't think we're going to feel for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, those young men you're talking about right now are going to grow up. And then what?
It's the shadow side of the movement, right? Yeah. I mean, it's the side that it's self-perpetuating.
Yeah.
It's going to perpetuate the same thing. Cause if those guys don't ever learn how to have desire, you cannot turn off desire. Teenage boys are not going to all of a sudden not be horny.
No, we're cavemen.
Or girls.
We're,
right? I mean, they're all like, you know, young people are like exploring their sexuality. They're feeling things going on in their bodies and they're wanting to explore it and understand it, you know, and touch is a way to do it.
I remember being a 15-year-old boy.
Totally. You know, you can't just
couldn't control anything.
Right. I mean, there's a funny like, you know, I don't know if you ever saw Book of Mormon, but there's like a funny thing. It was like, turn it off. Like a light switch, you know, I'm just like, just go home and be like, whoop, like, okay, it's off now. Like,
sure.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
It's not even a dimmer switch.
Not even a dimmer switch. That's funny.
And I think it's unrealistic to think so. I mean, not, you know, from where I go.
Sure.
So I'd rather be in the conversations than not.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure, you know, we're talking about little technology and now we're starting to mix in, like Tinder and Bumble and all these other digital dating apps. And it's like, we're just not, still not interacting with people anymore. And it's like super inauthentic and it's creating these weird pressures around meeting people and these weird expectations. And I'm not sure if that's definitely not helping the situation either. It's like, it's amazing that you can meet so many people or have the opportunity to meet so many people. But at the same time, you're like not interacting with people. You're not sharing moments with people. You're not... Who knows how real these people are. I met plenty of people where it's like, that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking train wreck sometimes. And I'm not sure if that's probably not helping people either.
I'm amazed at how many young people I hear who are meeting people on Tinder. Like teenagers are using Tinder and like I've never done it. So I don't, you know, the swipe, whatever. And I'm just like, no, seriously? Like, oh shit.
I hate it.
I'm amazed that what I've heard is like, and what I can sense is you're interacting with this profile and there's this question. I mean, you were just asking it of like, are you real?
Yeah.
And who are you really? I mean, like there's just a very real question. Like actually, are you who you say you are?
Sure.
You know, like, are you some like 65-year-old dude, you know, or woman, you know, like, what do they call it? Catfishing or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
You know, like, are you actually who you say you
are?
And then And then
physically,
literally,
yeah.
Which is unnerving and hard to actually figure out.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, it's not just sort of like, I am who I say I am. Well, how do I know? You know, how do you know? It's weird. Yeah. And then there's a sort of deeper thing of like, I don't know if it's deeper, but it's, you know, of like, who are you really? You know, like, are you representing yourself?
Well,
like,
are
you representing? And
they're all representations of who you want. It's like, I want you to see, this is who I want you to see right now.
Yeah.
Right now. But later it's like, oh, that's, there was a different person underneath your profile, which is really, I've run into where, you know, I met one girl and ended up that she had been married for, she was like 26 and she had been married for 7 years.
Wow.
And then she had been in a relationship for a year. And then she told me all this and she immediately started crying. And then I'm sitting there just like deer in the headlights, like, holy shit, this is a broken human. Mm-hmm. And then I just turned into empathy Brad and I'm like, well, I can't leave her sitting here. So I'm just going to sit here until she wants to leave. But it was just an example of like, none of that was in her profile.
Yeah.
She wasn't like, I was married for 7 years and then I was in a relationship for a year. And I've been single like one month of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, it's an interesting dynamic that's happening right now where we're still not interacting with people. We're interacting with profiles and
I notice myself curious. I know I have a bias. I think it sounds like you do as well. You know, of like real human interaction is where it's at.
Well, I'm looking like for me, you know, and I get what people want to do whatever they want to do on those apps. That's fine. But I'm looking for like an authentic connection with somebody.
Right.
And I hate being on an app because it's so inauthentic. Like I can try to put, this is me on an app, but people don't buy it.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that's just, you're just putting that on as a front. It's like, well, fuck. Like, and so then, but the thing is like, then the common attitude now is we're like, where do we meet people? Well, you're on apps. And so then it's like, well, now I guess I have to be here.
So and it's like ecstatic, ecstatic dancing,
right?
Is what I find fascinating about it is that it is this interplay of you know, you're dancing, and so then so the first level is just like, can I dance?
Yeah,
right. Of like, am I willing to dance? Am I willing to just like be here and let go? And like, what is me being authentic? You know, and like letting myself express.
Yeah.
So there's that level of it, which is, I think, amazing. And then once you sort of figure that out to some extent, you then start interacting with other people. And and I find that it is, it asks a lot of these questions, and it's nonverbal in many cases, not all cases. How do you dance with someone? Right? Like how, like, is it fun? Is it playful? Is it erotic?
Yeah.
And for me, being a guy who's always been nice and saying like, my desire has always been, I've always felt ashamed of my desire, to like play and practice with having desire. Mm. And I get some feedback like right away. You know,
right.
Like I'll just like come up to a woman or a man, and you know, just be like, hey, you know, and they'll be like, just like, they'll, you know, and one of the, I think one of the rules is that like at any point you can just leave, you can just like, you can either interact or you can leave.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, you know, and like not to be offended if someone's just like, you know, whatever, but you can get, I mean, you kind of play, I mean, it's like a playground of all this stuff that we're talking about of how to actually create connection with people. Mm. With your body and there's touch. And I mean, there can be, you know, like once you know, kind of learn how to cross some of those lines and then actually, I mean, for me at least, like dance with someone, then I can actually like, then we touch them, you know? And so now you're like, kind of like inner, like contact improv, kind of like just feeling what it feels like to interact with someone's body.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So there's another permission here where it's like, I feel safe enough and they feel safe enough to now be interacting at that level. And it's just, to me, it is a fat, it's like, it really does feel like the, and I'm not like an ecstatic dance, like, you know, guy,
right.
You know, like I've gone like four times or something like
sure.
that, but I can just tell that it's like such a fascinating playground of like trying to, how do we interact with each other?
how do we interact with ourselves too? Like just letting go and interacting with our own bodies and exploring the way our bodies move. You know, there's a guy I listened to his podcast. His name's Aubrey Marcus. And he's, I don't know if you've heard of the nutrition company Onnit, but he founded that. And anyways, he was talking about him doing a static dance a lot. Hmm. And he does it like alone in the dark or even with the lights on by himself.
Yeah.
And he's just like, who fucking cares? Yep. Just explore your body. Yep. Just move it in weird ways and let it go. And, you know, that self-exploration is really, shouldn't be like shameful. You're just dancing. But just the idea behind it too is just to explore and don't be afraid. Let go.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are some of your, you know, you bring up some of these concepts, your teenagers that you work with, how do they take it? How do the guys take it?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, Michael Mead, I'll go there in a second. Michael Mead says, you know, that a culture that doesn't dance, like you can tell the health of a culture by how much people dance, you know, and in our culture, people don't really dance.
Oh man.
And then the only time they do dance is when they're like hammered.
I was telling you, we were on that trip in Zurich.
Uh-huh.
And working for a European company.
Yeah.
And you can totally tell who the European men are and who the American men are. The American men are just kind of like awkward drinking and like then they'll start to kind of move. And the European men are just tearing it up. Maybe they've had a few drinks. I don't know. But they're just tearing it up. Just totally different level. Just letting loose.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, just like the ecstatic dance, it's not, you know, I mean, people probably come on hot, they're high and all kinds of stuff, you know, but it's like in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so you're, you know, it's like, can I just be myself? Can I love that. I mean, I love what you said of just like that dance with yourself of how do I bring myself?
Yeah.
The dance has actually inspired me to that we started doing more sort of like wrestling, dancing, contact improv stuff with the boys.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And because I sort of caught like how important touch is. I mean, I knew that for a long time, you know, but like being able, like I've hugged, like, you know, when the guys come, I give them a high five and hug and, you know, like I'm not shy about that at all. You know, but there's this whole taboo around like adult men touching teenage boys, you know, like you aren't supposed to do it. You know, and I'm like, fuck that, you know, like, you know, I'm not a rapist and I'm not a, like, you know, whatever.
We'll be good with this hug. Yeah. You know, hug's going to be okay.
Yeah. You know, it's like, So then we started wrestling with each other and like dancing and stuff like that. And it's cool. I mean, you know, so that topic, you know, they really, really like it. And the other stuff too, you know, of just like how to have desire, how to ask girls out, what happens when you don't, you know, like I've had guys call me from, like a couple of weeks ago, a guy was at a dance and he asked a girl out.
Yeah.
And she said no, or, you know, and he was like, I'm under the table at the dance. And she said no.
Oh, shit.
You know, and he was just like, oh, and I was like, that was so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, like you totally went for
totally
it.
Totally went
and
for
like,
it.
And like were courageous and like asked what you wanted and it didn't work. But like, how awesome is that?
Right.
That you did it.
Way to fall on your face. Totally. Good job, man.
Absolutely. Exactly. It's like the walking thing. Yeah. Right. I'm just like, way to go.
Yeah.
You know, so I talk about that all the time with the guys, you know, just of like, you know, we ask, like, did you ask him out? You know, what happened? How did it go? What did you say? You know, and we've even done like, they're called constellations where we like act out scenes.
Yeah.
And then we'll be, you know, we'll have the person and the other person. Then we'll have like the voices in your head kind of
I've heard a little bit about that.
It's so cool. It's amazing. Yeah. And so they like play the voices and then you say like, so what are you thinking right now? And then they like, and we like kind of show the whole situation. And it's amazing. It's always fascinating and just so cool to just say like, you know, here, of course you're like nervous and you've got an erection and you're like, you know, like feeling goofy and, but you're like, of course, and enjoy that. Like that's part of the whole thing.
Part of the dance.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the you know, the boys love it. I mean, and I just feel honored to do it.
And how do you, I guess at the point, like, okay, you falling on your face and then what, and then now what? Cause you know, a lot of boys could either close up and be super frustrated and act out, or they can, what's the next healthy step look like
after
you fall on your face?
To get up.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, seriously.
Yeah. Like it is. And that to me is a place where like the community that we're building, you know, and like that we have is like, I feel so honored to be able to sort of hang out in that place. And again, like in paying enough attention that I can see when they fall down. Mm. And so then, you know, to help them up or to say like, you know, it's time for you to get up.
Yeah.
And then acknowledgement, you know, and really seeing them in the struggle, in the adventure, and naming it as part of the journey. In a more kind of like, I was talking with a kid last Friday who is dealing with a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety around these days,
yeah.
Right? Like people really feeling that, like if people see me and know me, they aren't going to like me.
Yeah.
And so I can't show up at school. I can't really take any risks. I can't really do anything.
Yeah, that's horrible to walk around like that.
Oh, it is an epidemic. I'm telling you that we are in a huge amount of trouble with this.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, from my perspective, it's sure. Like, and so I'm working with a kid like that and he's, getting up every morning, hating school, but he's showing up and he's doing his work and he's trying to get good grades and he's trying to like, you know, he's trying to just feel better about himself and he's been like struggling with it for months.
But he's probably just tired.
He's exhausted.
Just tired.
He's just so, I mean, because he's not sleeping and he's like, you know, and he's, you know, depressed and not, in this case, not suicidal, but many of them are. And, you know, so the question of like when you fall down, like they're down and they're struggling and no one is acknowledging the effort that they're making. Like this kid is like working so hard.
Yeah.
To figure it out.
And then telling that kid too, hey man, guess what? You go to 6 more years of college and you'll make it.
You'll be
that
great.
That kid's just probably like, fuck.
Right. Well, and like the way that we do college, it's like, you know, go to college and you'll figure it out. You know, yeah, like go to college. You know? And then you get to, I mean, like it's like this extraordinary experience we're expecting to have.
Yeah.
And you get there and it's just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like this is sort of lonely and like I still don't know what the fuck is going on. And like all the adults and all the teachers and all the institutions and all my friends, you know, who are like, told me that this was going to be extraordinary. There must be something wrong with me.
And you're put on a, you know, I feel like you're put on a deadline to figure out what you should be loving in life. By the end of 2 years you should know what you want to do. You'll find your passion by then. That's your deadline. Yep. That's your timeline.
Yeah, you got it.
And so when you get there and you're like, well, I'm not on that timeline, there's something wrong with me.
Yep.
It's like everyone has their own timeline.
Yep.
Figured out. I don't know if I figured it out.
We are really, really good at there is something wrong with me.
Ugh.
And we just keep perpetuating it over and over. So your question of like, so what do we do when people fall down? Is we, you know, like, I mean, what I do and what Play Huge does is just say like, nice work.
Yeah.
And so now, and then we evaluate, okay, like, where is this kid? Like, what, you know, are they down? Like, do they need us to come in and like pick them up? Yeah. Or is this an important struggle? Like, is this a place where they have the capability to actually get themselves up? Mm. You know, and what tools can we use to say, okay, so time to get up, you know? And the things that we use, like sort of practically, are presence. You know, just like being with your body, like right in the, like just what are you feeling right now? Like what is the experience in your body?
Yeah.
And breath, right? Just be with the breath. And then we use gratitude, you know, just imagine like what that. You're feeling grateful for.
Yeah.
And the thing that, you know, gratitude is like this big, you know, sexy topic that everyone's talking about a lot. But for me, what gratitude does is it starts to, you have to search, like if you have to keep searching, what am I feeling grateful for? And you can get to some really obvious things and that's okay. Cause what it does, it starts to shift your perspective of seeing the world as possibility instead of just struggle. There's so much to be grateful for.
It takes practice.
It takes practice. And it's an important practice of shifting perspective, of being able to see the shit that you know, to be able to see the courage it takes to ask her out or the courage it takes to show up at school or the courage, you know, like, to see that and acknowledge yourself, even though it fucking failed brilliantly.
Right. Well, a lot of those things you just described, to me at least, you know, you're sitting, you're being present, you're working through your breath, you're exploring gratitude. Those always take a certain amount of an ability to sit in discomfort for just a moment.
Yep.
Until you can get over the hump a little bit. But if we don't even approach it, if we're just on our phone or if we're just ignoring it, then we just, but if you just let yourself get past it, you can break through.
Yeah. And just feel it.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, again, so like training for the unknown, you know, yeah. Is training for the unknown is being able to be with that discomfort. So we like in Survive and Thrive, which is the program I do for teen boys, yeah. You know, is, we just make shit up.
Sure.
I mean, we just like, we like quite, I mean, we have like a structure of saying like, here's some key skills, you know, that, that we're going after, you know, which is really like breath, gratitude, and presence. Mm. Like those are sort of the foundational pieces. And then we just go like, great. So what are we going to do today? And we kind of like
explore it together.
We explore it together. We That's make awesome. It up and then it works or it doesn't. Like sometimes we're just like, wow, that sucked.
That's incredible.
You know, and then we're yeah. like, okay, so what was that like? And then everyone's like, Morgan, why didn't you do something better? And I'm like, well, what? I wasn't fucking, I'm not the only one here creating this.
Yeah.
You know, like you could have spoken up.
Sure. Sure.
And then we're in that trouble, you know, so it's just constantly like celebrating that we're just making it up.
Just
and
making
like,
it up.
We're being in this moment and figuring out how we have an extraordinary experience together.
I like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, going back a little bit to the thing, like the kids with the anxiety in school, what I've noticed a little bit too is the guys I've talked to who are just like in this zone of like happy, chill, like just loving life, they're all doing their own thing is for work.
Yeah.
They're all like, they're entrepreneurs in a way where they're just not shackled down by some corporate job. They're not in school. They're not in a structure because they're just free to be themselves and do what they want.
Yeah. It's a bit, yeah.
And I don't know. It's just a little common. I mean, I'm sure there are many happy men who are in a corporate job or a very structured environment. But for the most part is what I'm starting to see is all these guys who aren't being told what they should be or what they should do are just super happy and really good dudes.
Yep. Yeah. And I would go back to the place of, is it okay to be me?
Yeah.
Can I, do I, you know, like if I, you know, that idea of I'm going to be myself.
Yeah.
And some people really like the corporate, you know, like their brain is just, you know, like some people are great at school. Like their brain just works for all sure. the academic stuff. And like, God bless, you know, awesome.
We need them.
Yeah, totally need them. Like that's their unique journey. Like we all have a totally unique journey of our stories. And, you know, I mean, and so it's, you know, it's not like corporate's right. You know, this is right. You know, it's just like, can we be ourselves?
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
So we start to kind of time's flying by here. Yeah. but I have this, for my women listeners, I've requested them to send in questions that they want to hear guys talk about.
Yeah.
I just call it What Women Wonder. So I have kind of, I always run through two questions with other men. But this one is kind of unique and then it's not really a question.
Yeah. Okay.
Right which it's kind of funny, but I'm just going to read it as it was sent to me.
Nice. Okay.
And then we can kind of talk about it a little bit. And just as a caveat, I'm not like making fun of this person or anything like that. I just think the thought process behind it's interesting, but it just says, I'm interested in what changes need to happen for men to start taking on their full share of responsibility for running a household. So many men seem to struggle with even recognizing the things that need to be done, let alone taking ownership of where they live and actually doing the things that keep day-to-day stuff running. I don't know where to even start to address this problem, and it's deep and almost universal, even among progressive feminist men. So it's not really a question, and it was like this kind of escalating statement of that went into almost universal that all men don't help around the house.
Yeah.
And I'm just a little, I'm kind of curious to explore that a little bit for a few minutes. Just.
Yeah. Do you have a reaction to it? Like, what are your?
It's confusing to me. Like, I don't know what the expectations are or what's happening with this person, but from what I've observed, men always play some part in the household, right? I mean, I was raised by a single father, so obviously.
Yeah.
But even like I look at my grandparents and my grandfather's like upkeeping the house and the lawn and stuff like that, whereas my grandma has a different role. Now, older generation, very traditional gender roles, but even observing other couples, it's like there's always a yin and a yang. And I don't know. This is super confusing,
right?
Especially when it goes into the all men territory.
Right. I mean, yeah. It, I mean, one place that I go with it is the reflection of oftentimes the frustration and energy that we bring to something. Mm. It's easy to put it out towards other people. And what it's harder to do is then look back at ourselves, you know? So in this situation, the person asking the question has, you know, it's like, there's some work to be done about assumptions and about, you know, there's just a lot of interesting territory in there to explore. Like, why is it that you're caught in those places, sure. and that's how you ended up in a relationship, sure. like that. And, you know, I think that's really valuable. And again, like adult mature work is to say, it's so easy for us to look at other and go like, it's their fault.
Yeah.
And then it's much harder for us to look at ourselves and go like, oh shit, that actually has more to say about me than it does about,
right.
about them.
And some of it too, like, we were talking about presence. And I think men sometimes fall a little bit short on being present, sure. just fully present. And maybe this, whoever she's having this thing with or experiences with, the guys have done it, but they're just not present.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, they're just kind of, whatever, they do it and then they're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe it's a presence issue even.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, being in a relationship, there's a lot of hard conversations that happen and then that don't happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get into our patterns of, of whatever, you know, of resistance and of, you know, avoiding stuff. And, you know, and I feel like there's a lot in that question or in that statement, you know, of what are the roles? Like, what are the gender roles?
Were they stated in the household?
Exactly. You know, and like, what are the stories? Like,
sure.
you know, I'm really intrigued by the stories, you know?
Well, the part that was intriguing in here for me too, is it's deep and almost universal.
Yeah.
It's like, that's taking it. That's that right. That overreaction we were talking about.
Right. 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 Yeah. Cause like, I mean, that doesn't, you know, I mean, there's plenty of issues in my life that, you know, as a dad,
yeah.
and as a husband and as
yeah.
all of it is, but like some of that stuff, you know, like I don't really resonate with that, you know? So it's like, you know, I don't want that put on me as like that. I'm that kind of man.
Right.
I'm actually not that kind of man. It doesn't sound like you are
no.
either, you know? And so it's universal, like, you know, but I mean, there is the stereotypical, like, guys just like bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
And,
bought you a vacuum cleaner for your birthday.
Right. You know, that kind of stuff, which is shifting,
yeah.
you know, I mean, you know, which is shifting. And then, you know, the other thing that just occurred to me is like, it's a confusing time for men and for women, you know, of like, how do we do this, these roles, you know, of, you know, men being more attentive to family, women, you know, being more part of the workforce. I mean, it's sort of the old tradition, you know, like, I mean, it feels like women, there is a shift happened in our culture.
Yeah.
Right. Of women are working more. Thank God, you know,
like right.
bringing more of that energy to the world.
Exactly.
And men, you know, I mean, you know, we do have trouble expressing our emotions.
Sure.
You know, we do have some trouble in those kind of areas, you know, or I mean, some of us do, some of us don't, you know, but
right.
it's just like, I get curious about the individual stories.
Yeah.
I am hesitant to make universal.
Yeah. I don't like universal anything.
Yeah, it doesn't. It
just in like, any case, I don't like universal anything.
Yeah. It feels,
you know, I was talking with my buddy about this and he's on Team Human too. So sometimes we're like, I was talking to him. He was having him on a later episode that I'll release, but it was like, we just don't even understand the gender roles. Like, just because we're like, isn't that everybody? Shouldn't we all just not be assholes? And shouldn't we all be taking this responsibility? Shouldn't we all be doing this? Like, why is it a female or male thing?
Yep.
And that, you know, includes stuff like in the house. Like, why is that silly?
Yeah. It you know, again, I mean, I'll go back to like the, you know, the mature whole conversation piece, you know, if we can be adults and we can have difficult, uncomfortable conversations with one another and be in the conversation of how do we want our household to run?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be in charge? How is this going to play out? You know, like
set it up for everyone to succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
And be able to be in those kind of conversations.
Sure.
Great. You know, like there's not a right way to do this.
Yeah.
there's just our way to do this.
Yeah.
But all of our shit comes up in that, right? Yeah. I mean, her shit comes up in that question or her, you know, her statement, but like, if I were to write a question like that, my shit would be, you know, like,
sure, absolutely.
Be able to stand outside that and be like, oh dude, your shit is all over that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. That's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
So the second one, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, so we can kind of, we'll just put a kind of a, put it in a box, but what do you consider to be tangible indicators of masculinity? Rather, what things would you say make you a man and why? Hmm. So those tangible things.
Yeah. You know, I'll just go back to myself, you know, in the sense of I'm hesitant to say this is what manhood or masculinity is. I know for me, I am working to be vulnerable. I'm working to be authentic. I'm working to, you know, shine the light into those dark places that I don't see.
Yeah.
And I'm intrigued by those. And to bring, you know, an interesting combination of my heart, you know, that deeply caring part of myself, and a strength and a determination and a, you know, curiosity and vigor to life that, you know, I can feel what it feels like to be fully myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's like vital and alive and, you know, like so sure. much in there. And I'm not ready to say like, that's what it is to be a man, but it's at least what it is to be this man.
Sure. I like that. This man part.
That's the best I got. I mean, that's all I can do.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess for me, I start to feel most like a man when I'm just completely present with somebody. That just makes me feel really strong. It makes me feel just in tune. It makes me feel a little bit fearless in a way, because you might be present in uncomfortable moments too. So being fearless, just living without resistance, just being able to go with the flow. And again, like, these could be things to everyone. These could be things to women, but for some reason, right. for this man, that makes, it's how I feel most masculine. What makes me feel like a man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just different how those.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of people have really interesting, intriguing things to say about the masculine and the feminine and the energies that run. And, you know, there's interesting places in there, you know, of, you know, what the yin and the yang and, you know, those kind of things. But just for me, it feels more of like, I don't particularly care mm-hmm. like what parts of me are masculine and what parts of me are feminine. I just don't, that's just not the way my brain, my experience works. Mm. It just works as team human.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm glad other people are doing that exploration, I guess. Like, I don't particularly feel energized by it, but some people do, and that's great. Mm. For them, like, if that's their thing, that's awesome.
Sure.
You know, I imagine there's some value in places.
Well, I just read one article, I don't remember where it was, so sorry, but that the author was like, yeah, all that masculine, feminine, and energy stuff is bullshit. It's like, it's cool if you want to dive into it, but like, it's all about you, the person, how you feel in a given moment and what you're, you know, how you're acting. But all that other stuff, okay, fine. If that helps you in some way, fine.
Yeah.
Cool. So I have, these are questions just for you.
Yeah.
These are like quick hitters, that I like asking other guys, but if you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Oh, shit. 16. Let's see. Oh, man.
So that's like close to the boarding school for you.
Yeah, it's right there. 16. That was 1986. Yeah, I was like, a lot of emotion in that for me.
Right.
I mean, the thing I would do, I want to hug that guy. And just hold him, and I, you know, maybe say like, "You're okay."
Yeah.
You know, just hang in there.
I love it.
I think, yeah. A lot of the stuff I feel like I try to say to young guys, you know, which is like, "You're fucking rocking it and putting in so much effort."
Yeah.
You know, and I know you feel like shit, but you're on a good track.
Be powerful for a 16-year-old to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hug. The hug.
Boy,
the hug.
Ooh, the boy. They got to get that hug in there, though.
It's a long hug.
Awesome. The greatest lesson, what to do or not to do, you learned from your dad.
Shit. Hit him in the balls with a tennis ball. No.
Could be one of the greatest lessons. You don't have to.
Yeah. Wow. That I learned from my dad. The thing that's coming to mind, my dad died when I was 18, so not long after that guy. He had a brain tumor, and he maybe because he had a CAT scan when he was younger. No, I'm just kidding. Didn't actually. He was in the hospital, and he was close to his death, and I remember taking his hands and just saying to him, like, take whatever energy you need from me to stay alive, because I want you to stay alive. And he didn't. He died 2 days later. And it occurs to me that what happened was, instead of me giving him my energy, he gave me his. Mm. And I think that what it was his death for me sort of sent me on this journey of you know, the when I talk about, like, running, you know, teenagers running energy, or like feeling something deep in themselves they don't really understand, like something woke up in me in that moment that had always been there, but was like, go after light. I mean, there weren't words for it. I can't even pretend to put words on it, but it was just this feeling of like, bring this to the world. Mm-hmm. You bring you to the world. And again, like, I couldn't understand it at all, but and I just got wicked committed to that. And it's been a really hard journey of staying true to that vision and that sort of mission of saying, trust yourself, like that deep part of yourself of like, there is some energy that's wanting to come through me into the world, is the way I say it. Mm-hmm. And I've been pretty damn stubborn and, committed and determined to do that. Mm-hmm. Made a lot of sacrifices and not played a lot of the games of like, okay, I'm gonna go and like be the good soldier and like compromise. I'm like, no, I'm fucking committed to this thing. Yeah. Even though I don't know what it is. And I'll say, like, finally at 48 years old, like, I'm finally, like, in the last couple of years, it's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
There it is. I finally like feel confident enough and I feel it running where I'm like, oh shit. Okay. But it's been a hard, you know, 25 years,
yeah,
30 years, however long it's been.
Oh, that's beautiful.
30 years, shit, yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you. The final question, just to lighten up sometimes, yeah, on the way out. No, it's, you know, I like it when we get into those things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So, but if you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why?
Oh, shit. The first thing that came to my head was myself.
I love it. I've had that answer and I love that answer.
I'm just like, it doesn't, you know, like, I mean, my dad occurred to me, but like,
I love that,
like,
you,
I got my hands full.
I like it.
You know, of like, I am so fucking curious about my journey.
I love that answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So Morgan.
Thanks, Brad.
You're a beautiful man. Thank you for joining.
Yeah.
Where can the people reach you?
So website is playhuge.com.
Okay.
And from there, you know, there's a, I'm going running a retreat soon enough, mm-hmm, for teen boys.
Cool.
So they can find out about that. Survive and Thrive. My
cool.
training, my one-on-one training.
Awesome.
Morgan@playhuge.com.
Okay.
Also.
Okay. And June 15th is the... We'll have this up next week. So,
yep. June 15th is the the event at Yoga Union in Portland, and then the retreat is June 25th, and then
awesome,
all kinds of good stuff coming.
Awesome, and I'll have all the links in the show notes for everybody to check you out.
Cool.
So, appreciate it. Thanks for joining.
Listening. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cheers. That was episode number 6 of the Modern Masculinity Project. Big thanks to Morgan Rich for joining me, and to all of you for listening all the way through to the outro. You're my super fans, and I'm grateful for you. Again, you can see Morgan speak in person on toxic masculinity at Yoga Union in Southeast Portland on June 15th. Just put that all into the Google machine to look up all you need to find there to get there. And all of his contact info is also in the show notes if you want to email Morgan or learn a little bit more about what he's doing. He's a great dude, and you should all check him out. The conversation with Morgan and I that we just had, at least, as hard as they can be to navigate some of the subjects we were talking about, these are the types of conversations that really need to be happening, especially between men. You know, the young men, those who reach that point of divergence I mentioned in the intro and that are feeling maybe confused, they need to have healthy male figures from whom they can learn, right? So we need to get our shit together and make sure that we're leading these young men and helping them through difficult times. They need someone that can tell them that, it's okay to make mistakes as long as they're not harming others, that's how you learn, that's how you grow. Don't be afraid to get out there and make those mistakes, as Morgan was saying. Otherwise, it's just, retreating to being shut in isn't a great way to go through life. And it makes it really hard to handle obstacles when they come up. And you should find strength in being honest and being vulnerable and just living without fear, but also knowing that there are consequences to being honest and in going for it. We just can't continue to lose young men to the fear of engaging in the world. We definitely need to support equality and all that. Not to undersell that, but we just can't lose people to fear either. The last thing I want to call out is our discussion of what makes us feel like men. Just because Morgan said something that is so simple and yet so powerful. He said he didn't know what makes other men feel like men, but he knows what makes this man feel like a man. We're all men, but again, we're all forged from a different metal, made of different material. So what makes this man feel like a man is all that matters. And, it's going to be a lot different than Morgan. What makes me feel like a man is different than Morgan, but just really embracing the idea of what makes this man feel like a man is important. So to all you guys out there, just do you, seek your own truth, and don't be confined by what people are telling you that you should be. Ladies, as always, if you're wondering how to submit questions for What Women Wonder, you can email me, mmprojectpod@gmail.com, or you can send me your questions via twitter.com @mmprojectpod is the handle. And just one last time, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It's a big help. Love you all. Want to keep doing this. So let's keep spreading the word and see if we can learn from each other a little bit more. All right, y'all. Until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts. And had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough.
Where we're going, there are things for the eye to see. When you're over there, you'll feel it all around. Let it all come through. I'll
in you.
Skin.